45.
Elon.
Brown, 45.
Hot.
You are listening to Any Given Sunday, Australia.
Yes, hello and welcome to the Any Given Sunday Australia podcast, the number one podcast in this household. An extremely exciting episode with one of the league's best wide receivers going around. I'm not going to hold up your time, I'm going to get straight into it, so here we go. Alrighty, joining me now is Any Given Sunday's biggest guest yet, live from Green Bay, Wisconsin, a superstar out of Iowa State, one of the elite group of people who gets to do a Lambo leap, and Green Bay Packers' number one wide receiver, Alan Lazard. How are you, mate?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on here.
Nah, mate. It's, trust me, my honor and my pleasure to have you. We'll get straight into it. Have you ever been down or ever thought about coming down to Australia?
I have thought many times. I actually had a teammate that was from, I want to say, Melbourne. He plays for the Philadelphia Eagles right now, Matt Leo. But he's told me a bunch of stories about Australia, especially the beach life, how it's a good time, a good vibe, great people and everything. But I haven't had the chance yet, but hopefully here soon.
Do you drink coffee?
Yeah, I drink coffee. I drink a lot.
Mate, best coffee in the world if you come down to Australia, trust me.
All right, I'll take your word for it.
So you, like I said, you were born and raised in Iowa. What was it like in growing up in the Lazard family? Was it always football, or have you played other sports as well?
Yeah, growing up, my dad actually played at Iowa State. That's where I ended up going to school for college and everything. But my mom was active in sports as well. She played basketball and volleyball. And so growing up, I was in every sport, track, football, baseball, basketball. So my parents kept us very active for the most part. Growing up in Iowa, though, it's a very, it's the Midwest. Iowa's known for its agriculture. My mom's side of the family, all of them are farmers and everything. So I kind of somewhat grew up on the farm in that life from that perspective and everything. But I was able to, kind of grow up in the city, so to speak, in Des Moines, and that gave me a lot of exposure, just to a bunch of different people, and I was able to get the city life and the farm life too, kind of both in one. So it was a great experience, and I played a lot of sports growing up.
Do you reckon that's helped you going into the NFL, being able to have all those different kind of backgrounds as well, especially track?
Yeah. Yeah, I think track's probably the biggest piggyback sport, you could say, as far as translating from track. Like, track will always translate to football, basketball, baseball, whatever, just the running mechanics. I think it's so important. But for football specifically, I think playing other sports will be the best, training that you can do for football, because it's such a unique sport, especially if you're playing multiple positions. Like, you go from playing in the O-line, D-line, in the trenches, or to playing on the perimeter of being a wide receiver DB. For me, I really think that basketball is probably the – basketball and baseball. Baseball helped me from, tracking the ball. I played outfield.
Yep.
So just tracking the ball, from a long distance and judging the trajectory, how the ball's going to drop, playing it off the wind. And then basketball from, a rebounding standpoint of, having to defend off of the defender, then be able to go up strong and be able to grab the ball with one or two hands, landing, on both feet, and be able to still be active and agile from that standpoint. So I'm a big advocate on putting kids in multiple sports, especially probably up until high school, at least. Some people may want to focus, narrow the focus a little bit more in high school, which I can respect. But I played basketball and football and all the way through all 4 years in high school and everything. I did track. I would have ran track a little bit more. I quit, or I like to say retired from track after my freshman year, just because our track season's from early February to, I think, state ends in middle of May. But a majority of the season, it's very cold here and windy. And I'm I already played football, you know, I'm already doing all this stuff. And I was pretty invested in basketball at the time, and it was just kind of overlapping from the basketball AAU season and the high school track season. So I ended up stopped running track, but mainly because it was just like so cold. I was just like, I'm not about to, I'd rather go
shoot. You're not wearing very much, especially on the track, are you?
No, you got to wait around too long. You got to wait around 3 hours just to run a race for 15 seconds. It's like, I'd rather be doing something else.
Fair enough. You went to Urbandale High in Iowa.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And Urbandale. From what I found, you were a star both on the offense and the defense, holding records with receptions, receiving yards, touchdowns, but also interceptions. What was it like? And was there ever a chance that you went down the defensive side of the ball?
Yeah. So kind of go back to what I said, my dad played at Iowa State, right? He played defensive back. Then he played a little safety too. So he played corner and safety. But so my upbringing of the game was from his perspective mainly.
Yeah, the defensive side of the ball,
having a defensive mind. So when I first got to high school, my first 2 years, I was primarily the free safety. My freshman year especially, we had a guy get hurt like the second game of the season, and he was out for the rest of the year for the most part. And then so when he got hurt, they kind of called me up from the freshman team. So my first 2 years, really my first 3 years, were pretty like defensive focus, and that's where I got most of my offers and attention from colleges, honestly, was at the free safety spot. But it wasn't until like my junior year when I was able to kind of really take the leap offensively as a wide receiver, to be able to kind of like gain a lot of attention and attraction and from other schools on to potentially play wide receiver. So I went to Iowa State, but when they originally offered me, it was for to play safety there. And then kind of my junior, senior year, they were like, you know, you're not too bad of a wide receiver either. So
How old were you when you got your first offer?
I would have been 16, I believe. It was just after our the school year ended, my sophomore year. So it was like end of May. I remember Coach Rhodes had called me on the phone when I was at home and verbally offered me over the phone.
Yeah, no, is that a surprise or is that kind of pretty standard?
As far as getting offered at that age, you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd say most people get offered around junior, senior year. Yep. Sometimes, you know, the recruiting world is changing drastically, especially with the NLI stuff now in collegiate football. Yeah. But so kids are, you know, you're getting a lot more attention, especially with social media and these different recruiting websites now. I would say most people, get offered around their junior to freshman year. Sometimes if you're a more developed kid and you play at a maybe not as a talented school, so you're playing as a young kid, playing as a freshman, you know, be able to get a little bit more looks and attention that way. But most people, it's probably like around 16, 17 is when they get their first offer.
Yeah. Do you reckon having that defensive mindset for so long, has that helped going in on the offensive side?
Absolutely. I think blocking-wise, especially, just of initiating contact. Obviously, as a defensive guy, you're one to initiate the blow. And be most of the power from the contact in those situations. So playing defense most of my career up until kind of college allowed me to kind of develop that callus, so to speak, as far as the physicality to the game. And then once I switched to the other side of the ball, I just saw it the same way. Like, now you're telling me I just don't have to tackle the guy, but I can go hit him as hard as I want. You know what I'm saying? Which is like, from a defensive standpoint, it makes it a little bit easier if I just have to go run and hit somebody.
Yeah,
and make sure that they don't tackle the guy who has the ball. It's a lot easier than going and like breaking down and trying to wrap up and tackle someone. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah,
playing defense was definitely detrimental to helping me develop my skill set and to be able to hone in on becoming a better blocker as well.
Mm. You obviously do it pretty well because I was doing some reading last night. You've only given up 7 penalties in your whole NFL career. So you obviously have some, you know, correct technique that you're doing. It's too many.
That's too many. Yeah.
Over 4 years, that's not too bad, but you definitely don't want to, but only 7, you've got more touchdowns than penalties. So that's a win.
Yeah, there we go. I like that stuff better.
you chose not to redshirt. Is that your decision, or is that a decision that Iowa make for you? And you know, how do you come to that kind of choice?
It's kind of a both unanimous decision between me as a player and then the coaches, you know, finding the, you know, it, will I be an asset to the team, you know, my freshman year? And unfortunately for me, I was, you know, I was pretty developed from a physical standpoint. But most of the time, the development needs to happen mentally. And that's just kind of where the redshirt kind of comes into play, because you're going from high school to college, where there's a lot bigger, stronger, faster athletes. The game's a little bit more complex as far as scheme-wise and plays that you run. But for me, I kind of just knew right away that I was going to have a good opportunity to play as a true freshman. And then we ended up having one of our wide receivers get hurt, like the fourth play of the first game. So since that moment, I was basically a starter in our offense for the next 4 years. So it was an easy transition for me to be able to kind of go into that role. And after a few games, I kind of was able to settle in and just be able to play how I usually play.
Was it always going to be Iowa State? Like, it's, I saw you got a few offers from a few different people, but you said your dad and your older brother went as well?
Mm-hmm.
Was that so always?
My mom went there as well. So
yeah.
From a young age, I would just kind of, you know, cultivated to loving Iowa State, the Cyclones and everything.
Yeah.
But once I started getting more attention from other schools, it kind of like, I kind of, you know, sat down and like thought about, like, do I really want to go to Iowa State? And I wasn't really sure. You know, I mean, these other schools have a lot of things to offer as far as, you know, a lot more success, especially considering Iowa State's recent history. A lot more just, you know, a different culture, a different location, more TV time, better networking potential for, you know, after football and everything. So I kind of considered them. The only team I was really kind of like, the only school I was like really considering was Notre Dame.
Okay.
And I took an official visit there. Loved the campus, loved the culture, loved the history there. But just something wasn't, I just couldn't figure out what it was, but just something wasn't like pushing me to go there. And I knew Iowa State was the right choice when I would close my eyes at night and I would think about playing in a collegiate uniform. And all I would see myself in was the cardinal and gold that Iowa State is. And so once that kind of like consistently was happening, I was just like, you know, and ultimately from a young age, you know, I had hopes and aspirations to play professionally. I didn't know if it was going to be football, basketball, baseball. And then once I started to get offers, my vision kind of formed more towards the NFL. And once I was getting these offers and everything, and I knew I was going to go play collegiate football, knowing the NFL was the end result, to me, it didn't necessarily matter what school I was going to, because I knew that I have the talent, I have the makeup, the build to be able to be successful and to play in the NFL. So I probably should have considered it a little bit more, because me just being a young, naive kid thinking that like the school that you go to doesn't matter, it somewhat does, you know, and it plays
absolutely.
It plays a fact or a factor in your exposure and kind of helping you climb the ranks as far as the draft and everything. But yeah, I was just young, naive, thought I could, you know, when I first attended Iowa State, I thought we were going to go, you know, undefeated for 4 years. You know, I didn't plan on losing one game. You know, I was just kind of the belief that I had in myself and the aspirations that I wanted to do. Now we ended up losing, or we only ended up winning, I believe, 8 games my first 3 years.
Yeah.
And that was something that was like kind of very hard and tough to deal with. But my fourth year, we ended up kind of turning the page and had 8 wins in total my senior year, and kind of was able to leave Iowa State a little bit better place than what I walked into. But yeah, it was a great experience. People ask me all the time if I regret going there, because I ended up obviously going undrafted and not having that much team success there at Iowa State. But no, I always tell people no, I don't regret it, because you know, I made my decision. I've always been someone that, like, if you say that you're going to do something, that you do it. And it's just like where my mental like discipline is from that standpoint. And I'm definitely happy and excited about the future of Iowa State football as well.
Yeah, beautiful. What would be like a typical day for someone who, we obviously don't have that kind of college system over here. So what, did you enjoy the grind and like enjoy the days at college?
Yeah, that had its moments. Iowa State being in Iowa, Midwest, like somewhat like Green Bay, it's very cold. So winter hits around late October, mid-November sometimes. I think naturally you would prefer it to be sunny and 75 all the time. Yeah. So from a weather standpoint, it wasn't the best. Going to classes, like typically you're in 15 credits, which would be 5 classes. So you're in like a full-time schedule from that standpoint. It's probably like 2, maybe 3 classes a day. Usually class schedules like Tuesdays and Thursdays are, you know, one class, and Monday, Wednesday, Fridays are your other classes. Typically you wake up around, if we have a 6 a.m. workout, then, you know, you're waking up at like 5:15, get into the facility, 6 a.m. workout to about 7:30, get done with that, clean up, eat breakfast. Class probably starts at 9 or so. You know, you have class for about an hour, hour and a half, maybe 2 or 3 classes, depending on when you can fit study hall in there. You got to go back to the academic center. So you get done with classes about, and kind of, you get done with academics, I should say, from like probably about 9 to about 4 or so is like when you kind of have your window of classes and tutorings and mentors and whatnot. Then after that, maybe you'll have to go back and we'll have to like film review, depending on what time of the year it is and everything, practice, you know, it's kind of towards the evening and whatnot. And usually you get home, you know, on a good day, like 6:37, but sometimes it may be later than that. So it's very much a full-time schedule, especially in season, for collegiate athletes and everything.
Yeah. And then you're presuming in season you're traveling as well. So are you leaving like a Friday, depending where it is and things like that?
Yeah. Yeah. Typically leave around like 1 o'clock or so on a Friday. And then we do the same thing, but we just on Saturdays now because we play Sundays. Yep. Usually leave around 1 or so, get to the city that you're playing in, probably around 4:30, you know, have your team dinner at 5:36, meetings after that. You know, usually the coaches usually allow a little bit of downtime. In college, you're not really allowed to leave the hotel. In the NFL, thankfully, they treat us like adults, and you're able to go out, you know, go to a nice restaurant, see your friends, family if they're in the city. Yeah. You know, and kind of just be able to get a time to just kind of decompress and relax before, obviously, the game the next day.
Yeah, beauty. From what I could see, that Kansas State, Missouri, Iowa State, they were kind of the rivals of you guys, or Iowa State's rivals. Who did you find that your biggest rival was while you were there?
Definitely Iowa. Definitely Iowa was our biggest rival. Now, they're in the Big Ten, which is like Ohio State, Michigan, Nebraska, and then we're in the Big 12, so more Texas, OU, Kansas, like you said. But I would say Iowa's just our biggest rival, one being in-state and being so close to each other. And two, I'd say like our next like biggest rival, quote-unquote, would be like OU or Texas, because we just always played them very hard. It was always a four-quarter game. They're always super talented, like top to bottom of their roster, just being able to find freak athletes and great football players every single year. You know, and they've typically had our number most of the time, but we always played them kind of really hard down the stretch and everything. But, you know, great competition and great schools to go against every single week.
Yeah. Your college career kind of followed a similar path to what your NFL has so far, just going, you know, strength to strength each year. Like I said, you were setting records at Iowa State growing up. Did you have a favorite game or favorite memory from college? And like, you were playing in front of 60,000 plus some weeks. Yeah. Like, as a college student, imagine that's pretty bloody awesome.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy going from 2,000-3,000 on Friday nights in high school to, you know, probably averaging over 60,000 for a game in college was obviously a different stage and everything. Yeah, but absolutely. I think I did very well. I've always just been, you know, focused, especially on the field, and not really got too googly eyes as far as the venue and the crowd and the way and everything. But yeah, I always enjoyed. I mean, and I would say, like I said, our first 3 years, we only won 8 games. So it was hard to get a lot of people to show up to games consistently. Yeah. But at the beginning of the year, there's always a big rush in the crowd as far as like how many people are there and everything. And the away games are always packed. But my favorite game, I would say 2 games. One, my favorite game probably would have been my senior year. We played TCU at home for homecoming. It was the end of October. And it was Halloween weekend that weekend. It was our homecoming. TCU was undefeated. So they're 7-0. And we played them like on a prime time hour. I think it was like a 5 o'clock game or something like that. We ended up beating OU. It was the only time in my college career that our fans rushed the field. And that was just something, you know, as a, I feel like as a kid that you kind of always like, you know, dream about of like playing in those games that are memorable from that standpoint, and having the team, having an upset and having your crowd rush the field and be able to celebrate with everyone that way. So when we beat TCU, that was our sixth win. And in college football, if you get 6 wins, you're automatically going to a bowl game. Oh, and nice. because we had yet to get 6 wins in a year, my first 3 years, this after that win, I officially knew that I was going to go to a bowl game finally. So it was just kind of a huge milestone for me in my college career of like, finally, I'll be able to go to a bowl game and play in a December game. And that game, and then which led to my second, or, you know, 1A and 1B favorite game of all time in college, was our bowl game versus Memphis. It's just very rare that you play a bowl team in their host city. So we played Memphis in Memphis at the Liberty Bowl, which is like a very rare thing. Most teams are usually the bowl games, they align it so there is no home team. It's supposed to be a neutral site. So but when we went to that game, it was obviously very much a home game for them, being that they got to stay in their backyard. The crowd was there and everything. But very fortunate for us, you know, Iowa State has always traveled well from its fans and had a great support system for its sports teams and stuff. So it was pretty cool that, like, literally, like, if you cut the field in half, like, half of it was red and the other half was blue. And it was just, like, a very intense game. And it was my last college career game. I ended up finishing with like 10 catches for, I believe, 120 yards, a touchdown. Ooh, geez. And yeah, it was just, you know, we ended up winning on like the last drive. I think we had a pick to end the game.
Yeah.
So just those two games were just very, very memorable and special for me.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't imagine having 60 plus thousand rushing the field. So that'd be, that'd be pretty elite, I reckon.
A little overwhelming, you know, a little overwhelming sometimes when 90% of the 60,000 wants to touch you and like give you a high five and stuff, and you're trying to say hi and thank you and where's my mom and dad, where's my coach, like
it's just want to celebrate
right. But it was a great experience.
Nice. You played in the Senior Bowl in 2018. How was that as an experience?
It was different, you know. It was my first like experience as NFL, right? So I mean, I'm surrounded by guys that would eventually go to play in the NFL, get drafted, undrafted or not. Like, this is the cream of the crop when it comes to the college level guys. And being coached by NFL coaches and being evaluated from that standpoint. So I was able to get – I thought it was beneficial for me because I was able to get early exposure to what the NFL would look like. And at the time, I played in the Liberty Bowl. I was just telling you about, and I ended up getting hurt in that game. Ooh. I rolled my ankle kind of really bad. Finished the game and everything, but the Senior Bowl was only probably three weeks later. So the quick turnaround, and I didn't really get a good time to heal and to be able to be 100% healthy. And so I wanted to play in the Senior Bowl just to be able to compete and be able to kind of show the scouts and the coaches, you know, that they should be drafting me and, you know, that I could – provide a huge value to the team. So I ended up practicing and playing the game even though I wasn't completely healthy. And I think that kind of hurt me just because I wasn't able to fully show my capability and my skill set from that standpoint. But it was a great experience. it taught me a lot. And I think, you know, eventually down the line is kind of what helped me set me up to like know what to expect going into my first like rookie camp and practices and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Before we get onto the NFL and playing in the NFL, I want to talk about at the top. Now, I've watched a bit of the ATT videos and listened to the podcast with Ryan Lillard. And can you explain what At the Top is and the At the Top lifestyle?
Yeah, absolutely. So At the Top was something I developed with Ryan, who's my best friend from high school. You know, I was getting attention football-wise. He played baseball and was getting a lot of offers and looks at from that standpoint. And we were 16 at the time, and we both thought that in our minds, we were living life at the top. We were being the best that we could do. No one else, you know, from our school, from our area, was getting the national attention that we were getting. And we knew that a lot of it was because of how we went about our life, of how we worked hard every single day. We practiced our skill set. And ultimately, we just were trying to be the best version of ourselves. And so that's what kind of one of our brand motto is being at the top isn't a place, a destination, or a title or accomplishment. It's waking up and being the best version of yourself every single day. So today it may be 100%. I feel healthy. I feel clear-minded. I'm not worried about anything else. I can go out there and I can, you know, today in the workout, I can hit it at 100%. But some days, maybe don't get enough sleep. Maybe you have some other stress-related things in your life that are kind of bothering you, slowing you down, holding you back. But I can only be 80% of myself today, of my normal 100%. Well, if it can only be 80%, then be 100% of that 80%. Don't settle at 79. Don't only get to 75. Like, and that's just kind of the way that we were able to attack life from a young age. And because of that mindset, you know, we feel like that really helped us set up for success. And so we came together about 2 years ago. Like, yo, we've always said at the top, ATT, like, this is something that me and him kind of, like, really shared and bonded together. And we're like, you know, how about we spread this mindset, this way of life, so to speak, and spread it with other people and try to have a positive impact. And so, that, you know, we did that about 2 years ago, and we're still very much in the developmental stages of our brand and kind of growing it out and trying to figure out that whole stage of how to operate things. But, you know, I think it's definitely been received positively from my teammates, from fans, from other people around that know about it. And, you know, I think most people just, you know, obviously want to be successful and to be consistent in their life. And so we think that having the at the top mindset can help you achieve both of those.
Yeah, beauty. Do you have like specific goals where you want it to go?
For the brand?
Yeah, for the brand, yeah.
No, I don't really have specific goals. I've never been like a specific goal person, even from like my career and everything. I'm not like, I need 20 touchdowns and 1,500 yards and 100. Like, I've always just been like one play mind oriented, you know, like, just very present, you know. And I know that, and I think that's what kind of the at the top mindset is too, of just like staying in the moment and just developing yourself and just being the best version of you right now. I can't sit here and win, you know, week one we play at Minnesota, but that's not for another two weeks or so. So like, I can't do anything to help us win that game until that day. But what I can do is keep on developing my habits, my technique, eating healthy, sleeping right, that will eventually, you know, stack up and compound each other. That will put me in a good position for when September 11th comes to be able to go out there and execute and to be the best version of myself to help us win. And so, yeah, I think that's just a way that I've really been able to attack this thing.
Yeah, beauty. Where could we find over here, find ATT?
So if you go to atthetop.life is our URL. We also have an Instagram, just at the top. Pretty clean. It's in my, if you go to my Instagram page, it's in my bio. You should be able to find it that way. Either via my Comey link, or like, I'm pretty sure I tagged it. I'm pretty sure it's like just sitting there at the top. Just be able to click it, get to the page, and you'll be able to find your way. And like you said, you watch some YouTube videos. We also have a YouTube page. at the top, where we kind of hit a little bit more of like diving down deep into like what it truly means and just like sharing experiences as far as things that have come up in our lives.
Yeah. You said, have you always had that kind of mindset, or was it when you were, you know, 15, 16 years old that you kind of developed it? Because like you said, you had an outstanding college career, but you were only rated a 5.9, which puts you sounds funny and weird to say now, but as an average backup or a special teamer, did that mindset kind of help you in that kind of time?
Yeah, I think the at the top mindset really helps you through adversity and times that things aren't going your way, of just consistently being yourself and knowing that, you know, this life, the universe has to balance itself out. So, you know, I could have had 2-3 drops today, but I can't let those 2-3 drops go to 4 or 5 drops tomorrow, you know, and just kind of just be able to stay even in keel and not get too high with the highs, too low with the lows, and just consistently just, you know, like we said, just being the best version of yourself and just being able to battle through adversity. So I think from a young age, I've always had that mindset and idea to, like I said, from a young age, I wanted to be a professional athlete. Yeah. I didn't necessarily know what it was, but I knew that that's where my end goal was going to be. You know, around 16 years old is kind of when I was able to kind of formulate it and kind of just give it more like a straight direction as far as how I was applying it to my life. And I think since then, I've just been able to kind of formulate it a little bit more and just be able to be more specific as far as like what am I doing to develop either A, as a professional, or two, as like a human.
Yeah. How do you go as a, you know, coming out of college though with that kind of mindset that I'm going to be a professional athlete, and then someone tells you, you know, we only rate you as a 5.9, we reckon you're a special teamer? Like, that's got to hurt at some point.
It does. You know, for me, I feel like there's always been different throughout the different stages of my life. There's always been someone that has been like, no, or like you're not good enough. You know what I'm saying? And going back, like, that's why I've always said I've always had that end goal mindset of being a professional athlete and, you know, being very successful and having a huge positive impact to not only my family and friends, but, you know, the community that I'm in as well. And so having that at the top mindset allows you to get a player card grading of 5.9, or to say that, like, well, you're not fast enough, you're not strong enough, you're too tall, you're too short. You know what I'm saying? It allows you to be critiqued, but to still persevere from those things. You know, I was graded this or that. You know, obviously I ended up going undrafted, but that never wavered me off of, you know, what my ultimate goal was. You know, I just had necessarily had to change my, had to reroute the direction that I was going in, because clearly whatever I was doing beforehand wasn't working. And so those things like that come up are just kind of spots along the journey of just kind of testing your faith and really kind of just trying to push you to a different level of yourself that you haven't seen before.
Yeah, beautiful. Really taking the negative and finding the positive out of it, I think, is the bit that I get out of it. So
yeah. Absolutely.
Like you said, you went undrafted, but signed with Jacksonville. How did you find your time there? Because you had Nathaniel Hackett, who's been the offensive coordinator for the Packers the last few years, and Doug Marone. How did you find your time there?
Not too well, honestly. Jacksonville is the only team that considered me as a wide receiver. A lot of teams, because I'm a bigger guy, 6'4", about 220 now. I was a little bit heavier when I was coming out of college, but most teams saw me as a tight end because they didn't think I was fast enough, explosive enough. But I always saw myself as a wide receiver, and I never wavered off of that either. So when Jacksonville called and said, they're like, hey, we see you as a wide receiver, I was like, all right, cool. That's where I'm going. You guys are the only ones that somewhat believe in me. Obviously, you didn't believe in me enough to draft me, but you at least see me as a wide receiver. And so I ended up going there where I think, you know, I'm a big believer that there's not necessarily coincidences, and I think a lot of things happen for a reason in life. And going to Jacksonville is probably, you know, for me, probably the lowest of my lows in life, from always dreaming about being drafted, playing in the NFL, then going undrafted, and now I'm in Jacksonville, halfway across the country in a city that I've never really lived in before. Didn't know anyone.
Would have been warm at least.
It was warmer. It was warmer. But there it was almost a little bit too warm. You know, it was there's plenty of days where it's just the heat was killing everyone. But my time there, I mean, I really just kind of was able to find myself in a sense. And it was more so it just tested my faith as far as like, is this really what I want to do? Because if this is what I want to do, then I have to put more time, more energy, more effort into becoming a better player so that the team or a team sees value in me to be able to make my dreams come into reality. Yeah. So every day, I really, really worked hard. Like I worked at trying to lose some weight to get a little bit slimmer, to be a little bit more agile. I really focused on my craft and developing my technique. I was with my receiver coach down there, Keaton McArdle, who's now in Minnesota. Played in the year for about 18 years, I think. And so he had a lot of knowledge, a lot of understanding of the game that I still revert back to my time that I was able to spend with him there. And like you said, having Coach Hackett as the offensive coordinator there, this is my first year not having him as a coach, which is, nice. I think, a very rare thing to kind of experience.
Yep.
But something I'm so thankful for because he's helped me develop light years past to where I used to be as far as my mental understanding of the game, whether it's the play that we're trying to run offensively or explaining what the defense is trying to do to stop us. And I think that's really where the where the NFL game is. It's not that their guys are that much more elite athletically or size-wise, but mentally you have to be able to improv and to anticipate things consistently throughout the entire game. And being with Coach Hackett allowed me to develop those skill set and be able to play fast and be able to play play hard. And ultimately, like he really showed me, especially as a coach, of just like being yourself is the most important thing. And like being the true personality of who you are, not trying to suppress your emotions, suppress things that you feel, and just to be yourself. He's a very open-minded, loving, goofy, but also extremely serious and like extremely detailed and hardworking. And that's something I really admired about him, which is on how fluid he was at being himself and just being silly, adding some character to team meetings sometimes, or not team meetings, to installs, offensive meetings, but like sometimes those meetings can be very monotonous and very just rigid and structural. But he would always add some flavor, some character to it with his teaching and his, you know, the plays that we have. I mean, essentially playing football and like understanding an offense or understanding a defense is like a second language. Like you have to be able to kind of speak the second language. And I think he did a really good job of just making that second language, helping us become very fluent in it from that standpoint, just be able to understand the terminology and what our responsibilities and our jobs were. And so I very much miss Coach Hackett and his personality and everything about him this year, but obviously extremely happy for him for the opportunity he's been.
Yeah, absolutely.
Rewarded with, and you know, I think something that he's extremely deserved. So I'm very happy to see how he does this year in Denver and to continue his success there.
Sounds like the Broncos are very lucky to have him down there.
Oh yeah, most definitely.
You were eventually or ultimately waived, and you signed the practice squad in 2018. How did that happen, and how did you end up in the Packers in December
that year? So yeah, I ended up getting cut from Jacksonville. And making the P squad, which is only about, at that time, there was only 10 players that make the practice squad. Now I believe it's 16 with a new CBA and everything. But back then it was only 10. And so I was on the practice squad the entire year there. I was very optimistic about potentially getting the call to become active and play on Sundays. And so that's why I had such a narrow focus and worked so hard on my skill set, because the game of football is filled with injuries and you just never know what's going to happen. So it could be next week I could be put into a playing position, and the week after that I could be a starter. So I always carried myself in that same mindset of that I was a starter, prepared like a starter, and I make sure I knew the plays, I knew the offense, and I was doing everything to put myself in the best position to be successful. Unfortunately, I never got that call from the Jaguars. And it wasn't until about week 15 or 16 or so, the Green Bay Packers called. I think it was like December 14th, something like that. They called, and since I was on P Squad, they could instantly activate me to their active roster. And so Green Bay called. I left Jacksonville, flew up to Green Bay the next morning, and was there the last 2 weeks of the season. They played the Jets, and they played on the Lions at home.
The Lions, yep.
And so since I knew that their season wasn't going to go into the playoffs at that year, I think they were 5-9 or so, 5-9-1, that I knew that, you know, like 10, 13 days that I basically all I had left of the season. And my biggest focus was making sure that over those 13 days that I would be able to make as big of an impact as I could to my teammates, the coaches, and the front office. And so when I first got there, you know, as far as my work habits and everything, I still carried over from Jacksonville. I still practiced hard, still studied hard. But I wanted to make sure that I was making plays, that I was showing up to meetings on time, that I showed that I cared and that I wanted to be there. Because when I got that call, it was kind of like my, like, you know, light bulb moment, so to speak, of like, oh, this is, you know, the average NFL career is 2.5 years. Yeah. At this point, I've already played a full season, basically. So I'm already kind of halfway done with my career.
Yeah.
And so, or potential. So I was like, well, if I don't make it here in Green Bay, you know, with arguably the best quarterback, how can I make it somewhere else?
Yeah.
So it just really just kind of like really locked me down. You know, I stopped playing video games as much and worrying about off the field stuff as much as really focus on my development on the field and everything from a physical and a mental standpoint. So I got to Green Bay, didn't play in that first game versus the Jets. Someone ended up getting hurt, I believe, that game, which allowed me to play in the last game of the season versus the Lions. And now, those that don't know, like, an NFL offense, like, a playbook's this big. Like,
yeah,
you gotta, and like I said, it's a second language. So, you know, I could have been speaking Italian for the past 5 years, but now I gotta learn German. Yeah. And it's like, not everything translates.
Yeah.
And so trying to, you know, learn a whole new language, so to speak, in 2 weeks is extremely hard. But, you know, knowing the situation and everything, I didn't really care. And I was like, I can't make an excuse. You know, I got to be able to, if these guys were to be able to put me in and to be able to play, that they have to be able to trust me to be able to go make a play. And to be able to go make a play, I have to know what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. So I really honed in on the playbook, try to learn and grasp as much stuff as I could. But no one really told me either at the time that, like, even though the playbook's this big, Aaron's playbook is a whole nother book as well.
Yeah.
But this playbook's unwritten.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You can't look it up. You just got to have experience. You got to, like, just learn from the meetings, learn from other players. Like, and so that was a very tough time, I guess, so to speak. But I was able to really focus in, learn a lot, and, like I said, suit up for that last game. Now, we ended up probably having arguably one of the worst Packers offensive performances ever in this game versus the Lions last week, which didn't really allow me to ever get any playing time because we, like, basically went 3 and out every single drive. But except for one drive, we got the ball rolling and everything, and they threw me in there for one play. I was able to get one catch, and that was it. And to me, that was probably my biggest accomplishment in my career. Because
so far.
So far, but also even that's one of the most proudest ones, because I did everything to make myself prepared for that situation, to know what to do and to be able to go out there and play.
Yeah.
And like I said, so at that moment, it was the pinnacle. It was the peak of
absolutely.
I finally played an NFL game. I got an NFL catch. I'm in the book. Like, is his history.
Yeah.
But at, really,
at
it just
Lambeau
made me,
as well.
At Lambeau too, with snow and it was cold as I don't know what, but yeah, that was just a, it was a huge moment, a huge confidence booster for me of like, okay, there's no more questioning whether if I can do it or not. Like, I did it. I'm here. I'm in the uniform. I'm on the field. The ball's in my hand. Like, this is it. This is the NFL. So that just gave me that confidence booster that I can continue to keep on growing, keep on developing, and to be able to play, obviously, more snaps and everything. So it just kind of was able to prepare me going into my first official offseason as a NFL player, and to kind of get the ball rolling as far as my development from that standpoint.
So from what I could read, and, you know, this is all just on paper, that you were waived again in August 2019 but activated 5 days later. When did you actually know that you'd be promoted, or was it literally between that 5 days?
Yeah, it was a very emotional time period. I was actually didn't play. So back then we had 4 preseason games. And in the 4th preseason game, I didn't play in because I had sustained a concussion the week before. So I didn't get to play in the 4th preseason game. The day after or so, I got cleared from my concussion protocol, which basically means that, you know, I could go back to working out, practicing, doing everything again. As soon as they did that, weighed me off the concussion protocols when they cut me.
Oh,
they cut me like in the same like time period of like, okay, you can play again, but now you got to leave.
Yeah.
And so, and I thought that I thought I had a really good camp. I thought I played extremely well, showed my skill set, and showed how much value I could bring to the team. But they ended up still cutting me. So that was it was a very tough time, because when you get cut at that time period, you go through the waivers. And so that means all 31 other teams have a right to you if they want to claim you before you can go back and be on the practice squad with the Packers. I knew that this is where I wanted to be, especially with Aaron as a quarterback and being kind of closer to home and everything.
Yeah.
But during that time period of like 24, 48 hours, whatever it is, you don't have a choice. If another team claims you off the waivers, you have to go there.
Yeah.
And so fortunately, unfortunately, again, no one claimed me.
Yeah.
So I ended up back in Green Bay, signing with the P squad. And then we ended up opening we had the first game of the season that year in 2019 versus the Bears down in Chicago. So I got cut, I believe, on Saturday, signed back to the practice squad Monday morning. And then Wednesday, I think it was Wednesday, it was Tuesday or Wednesday, I ended up signing to the active roster.
Yeah.
And the reason why they did that was just from like a GM standpoint, just like from numbers of, you got to keep a certain amount of guys at different positions and stuff. We were very deep in our wide receiver room. Yeah. It just kind of happened to unfortunately work out where they had to cut me and were able to re-sign me back because they had to put some other guys on the IR list, but they had to be to the active roster first. And
yeah.
It's just, you know, just culling within the lines from that standpoint and everything. But yeah, they cut me. I came back and, you know, I didn't really play or have too much of a significant role until later on in the season. But, you know, that just lit more of a fire into my drive as far as, you know, wanting to develop and to have an impact, because once again, it was like I got, even though I developed and I was making the right strides, you know, it was another thing in life that's just adversity. You know, I wasn't expecting to get cut, but definitely weighed on me emotionally, mentally. But having that at-the-top mindset didn't allow me to stay in that moment. It kept making me kept my drive going and trying to develop my skill set and to be able to prove to these people that, like, no, I can play in this league, and I can help you guys win games. And like, I'm trying to show that every single day.
You went on to suit up for 16 games that year, as well as 2 postseason games. Did you ever feel like settled or comfortable that you'd cemented a spot? Or
no, even today, I still don't feel like I have a cemented spot.
Yeah.
You know, I think a lot of it is because of how the early days of my career kind of went of this, going undrafted, being cut twice, and just like that really just developed this mindset of just never being able to be complacent, you know, and there's always, whether it's, you know, today or next year, there's always going to be somebody new that's always going to be trying to take your job, that's going to take your role. And from that standpoint, so my mindset focus has always been to make sure that I'm working as hard as I can to make sure that doesn't happen.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm pretty confident that you're going to be hanging around, so I'll say that one. But what was it like? You played two postseason games that year. What was it like running out in your first one against the Seahawks? Like, the atmosphere, I imagine, would have been pretty electric.
Yeah, Lambeau's obviously already a very electric, magical place within itself, and playing the playoff game was really when I was able to experience of just like a different shift of energy and just the entire environment was just a little bit different. For me and like my experience for that game and everything, I was still somewhat very focused and like went about my business the same way, but you could just tell from the crowd, the intensity of the game, of how hard the Seahawks were playing, how hard some of our guys are playing too, of just like, look, we're only two games away from the Super Bowl. You can really feel that intensity through the guys throughout the week of practice, the pregame, and then obviously the game as well. But great experience, and it's, you know, it was even better to be able to get my first playoff win.
Yeah, absolutely. That day, Devontae, he come out and 8 catches, 160 yards, and 2 touchdowns. Like, that's obviously, most people would dream of those kind of days. What's it like to share a room with a guy like Devontae?
Something that I'll never get to experience again. know, to be able to experience, be in a room with a guy of his caliber of talent, his caliber of his, you know, like I said, like the football, the game of football, it's an NFL level. It's way more mental than it is physical. And his mental capability is, you know, it's something like I've never been around before. I'm just feeling too work at in a high pressure situation, but also be able to slow things down mentally and be able to attack the leverage of the defender and to be able to focus on your technique and your footwork to where it is perfect in a sense and not wavering just because it's third down or there's a minute left in the game or whatever it is. So I've developed a lot of things. I definitely credit Devontae for a lot of the development of my success because of being around him every single day, watching his work ethic, watching him, how he carries himself in meetings, in the weight room, with treatment, on the practice field, in the media, you know. And in the most thing that I've admired the most about Devontae was probably just how he was as a man off the field, taking care of his family and his business from that standpoint. And so being able to share the room with him for the past, 3 years, was something I'm very grateful for. And, you know, obviously I wish him the best and the most success in Las Vegas now. I know he's in a very happier place as far as living situation and all that good stuff. But yeah, I mean, having Devontae was huge for me as far as like my mental and like physical development.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like you said, we're never going to see anyone quite like him again, are we?
No.
Yeah. By the stats, you technically had less catches and yards in year 3 than you did in year 2, but you did it in 6 less games, and you started in 9 of those games. Like, so we're continuing that steady upward progress, like we said, in college. But you had a pretty serious core muscle injury that year. I actually remember when you got it, I went to work, and I got another Green Bay fan at work, and I was like, fuck, he's hurt himself. He's out for the next few weeks. What was the injury, and what was like recovery and things like that like?
The injury was I tore my groin and my abdominal muscle off my pelvic bone.
Ouch.
yeah, it was very excruciating, to say the least. It was in the middle of the game. It was a Sunday night game versus the Saints. It was just after halftime. It was like our first drive. So it was the third play of the second half. And when I did it, I knew something was wrong, but I didn't know how bad it was. You know, obviously you have a lot of adrenaline going, and you know, Devontae was out that game, so I was basically the number one at that time, and I knew the opportunity that I was given that like I couldn't just leave it there. So coming off the field and like nursing this injury, just wasn't even an option for me at the time. It wasn't until after the game that I realized that it was a lot worse than what I anticipated and everything. But thankfully, you know, I went out to Philadelphia to see Dr. William Gray, I believe his name is, or William Myers, Bill Myers was the surgeon that I had, and he did a phenomenal job, and my recovery was as good as could be. I really can't complain. Every day I could feel myself getting substantially better, stronger, not as much pain as much as I would be sustaining the day or the week before. And it took about 8 weeks. You know, it was something that I had to do different adversity. You know, I'd never really sustained a significant injury like that in the middle of the season where it would put me out for weeks. Mm-hmm. And obviously, it being in 2020 with the craziness that this world was already presenting, it just added on to that. But, you know, like, luckily I have a great support group with my family, friends, and even the good amount of people that I have at the facility to be able to lean on. You know, was very supportive and helped me with my development. So I was able to come back, and I was able to come back, I believe it was like week 13 mm-hmm. or something like that. You know, I was able to come back and still have an immediate impact and, still play at a high level. So other than that, I mean, like you said, 2020 was a great year, from that standpoint. I think offensively we had one of the best offenses in NFL history, that year. So,
it was the highest scoring offense that year, wasn't it?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. You mentioned you slotted straight back in. You played some pretty sensational football post-surgery. My highlight was the 58-yard touchdown in the postseason against the Rams. What's it like, you know, breaking off a route and seeing nothing but green grass ahead and turning around and Aaron Rodgers is dropping this absolute dime into your hands?
The hardest thing, it's one of the hardest things, honestly, of like when you see that you're about to be wide open, you know, the ball's going to come to you, of just staying on your route and doing exactly what you're supposed to do. A lot of times when the defense breaks down like that, you just want to just turn around and yell at the quarterback, throw me the ball, but you gotta stay on your route just so that the timing of the play works out. And, you know, obviously we're able to formulate a significant play like the play it was in the playoffs for that touchdown and everything. But it's a great feeling of just knowing that, like, okay, I'm about to score here. And you're trying to, you know, maintain your poise and not think too much just make sure that you're staying on your habits of, you know, watching the ball all the way into the catch and then tucking it and be able to separate from the defender to still score.
Yeah, no, that's it. Definitely not playing the play before it's happened, and then I imagine that's when drops start to happen. But
yeah, usually.
Speaking of, a couple of lighter questions. Who your teammates? Who do you find to be the funniest or the most annoying teammate that we've got?
The funniest teammate, I would have to say, Elton Jenkins. I think it's just his personality. You know, he's from Mississippi. He's from, Hazelhurst or something like that, something Mississippi. But his personality, his the way he talks and everything, and really just his open-heartedness of just on how he is and carries himself is just very comical. And he's always, you know, me and him always are very competitive with each other. So always at each other's neck, you know, jawing at each other. You know, kind of just, you know, developing that, just, you know, that competitive spirit, whatever. But Elton's definitely a good time.
Yeah. What about most annoying? Anyone playing pranks on you all the time? Or
no, nothing. If anything, the most annoying thing is probably when Aaron tries to be funny, Aaron Rodgers, and like says a joke, and it's just like,
you have to laugh though. He's QB1.
you do sometimes, but sometimes you got to bring him back to earth, and it's like you got to go back to the drawing board. You can do better.
I'm sure he takes that well.
Right.
Where do you call home in the off season? Do you hang around in Green Bay, or do you get back to Iowa much?
Yeah, so I actually just bought a house back home in Iowa this year in January. So I spent my entire offseason there. I've just been around the family and working out. I went back up to Iowa State and worked with my coaches up there as far as my conditioning or strength and conditioning.
Yeah, yeah. Beauty. So we went through before, like, a day in the college. What is it much different a day in the life as an NFL player? Obviously, you're not going to as many classes, but I imagine there's as many film sessions and things like that.
Yeah, yeah. The film basically replaces classroom hours. So you're basically doing the same thing, sitting in a chair, you know, watching the teacher or coach present from that standpoint. But the typical day, you know, Wednesdays and Thursdays are our most busiest days. You come in, lift at like 7:15, 7:30. Special teams meeting around 8:30. Then you have a team meeting probably around 9:30. Then you have position meeting for probably an hour, hour and a half, maybe 2 hours. You know, you have a run install, pass install, and then you have practice. Practice is probably at least an hour and a half, if not longer. Post-practice, you know, come back into the locker room, shower, cold tub, treatment, whatever. And then we have film review of the practice after that.
Uh-huh.
And so typical days, you know, it could be anywhere from 7 to 8 in the morning when you're starting and probably finishing around 4 p.m.
Yeah.
So, and the whole time it's just all football, really, you know, whenever you're in the building. So sometimes it gets long, you know, especially like once you get deep into the season, it's week 9, week 10, you've been doing the same thing for 10 weeks straight. Every Wednesday, I have a 2-hour meeting about this run install. So that's why I think it's imperative to have coaches like Coach Hackett that we were saying of just, you know, adding flavor and just be able to change it up and make those meetings, you know, more engaging and involving from that standpoint. But as the season kind of develops, you know, we kind of peel back the meeting times a little bit. And sometimes we'll be able to get out at like 2 p.m. or so if we're lucky towards the end of the week.
Yeah, yeah. You mentioned it before that the world's obviously changed in the past few years. What's it like playing, you know, going from crowds to absolutely no one? And then do you obviously appreciate the fans a bit more coming out the other side, you know, having 60,000 people rush the field to having no one?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, not to say that the only reason why we play is for the fans, but they're a big reason. You know, they're a big part of the game environment and everything. And we feed off their energy so much. And that's why we're always trying to hype people up on the sideline when it's, you know, the defense is out there and it's third down. You see me waving my towel, trying to get everyone on the crowd to stand up, you know, to scream and stuff, because I know how much it helps us as a defense. And just like from an offensive standpoint, I also know being on the road and hearing 70,000 people scream, how much harder that makes it to be able to be successful for my job and everything. So when we lost the fans, it made it kind of awkward, you know. It's like it just didn't feel right playing those games where you could hear the other coaches yelling on the other sideline, like get deep, watch out for this, you know, like, watch out for this play. And it's like, well, this doesn't feel like a game. It feels like a scrimmage or a practice, you know.
Yep.
But then the intensity even like dropped a little bit too naturally, just from the environment, losing 60, 70,000 people. So it definitely allowed us to have a stronger appreciation for the fans and be able to interact with them and, you know, be able to go to a signing or go to an elementary school and talk to the kids and do stuff like that again. You know, I think as much as those things may be time reducing from that standpoint, like it's something that you very much appreciate when it gets taken away.
Yeah, absolutely. In 2021, you caught 8 touchdowns, but one of them was Rodgers' 443rd to pass Brett Favre for the most for the Packers. Well, I imagine that was a pretty special moment.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially because I wasn't, you know, going into that week, everyone knew whoever catches the first touchdown will be the record-setting touchdown.
Yeah.
But you just never know how the drive ends up, how the game plays out, of like when that play would necessarily come. And, you know, it was just on a very simple play, double stick. You know, I ran out, he threw me the ball, and when I caught him, I turned up field. I wasn't necessarily thinking about scoring. It was 3rd and 5. I was like, okay, I see how I get the first down here. But when I turned, I realized the defender was a little bit further behind me than what I anticipated, and I could see the pylon right there. So I was like, all right, I'm going to run up field, obviously, here, and try to get as many yards as I can. And as I got closer, I realized how close I was to the pylon. And I was very, very close to the sideline. So as I was running and he pushed me out, I made sure to keep my feet in. And I dove a little bit, but I didn't want to lose the ball either. So I stuck my hand out and was able to kind of knock the pylon over a little bit, which obviously allowed me to score and everything. But once I did that, I stood up and I saw the ref throw his hands up as a touchdown. It kind of just like all hit me. I'm like, yo, I just broke history. You know what I'm saying? And it was just like a very cool and special moment for me of just like, man, you know, this team cut me 2 years ago, and now I'm here helping the most historical quarterback, you know, break an all-time record.
Yeah.
So just a very humbling moment for me, and just like a deeper appreciation. And also, obviously, you know, becoming really good friends with Aaron over the past years and developing our relationship, for me to be able to have my hand in that, to be able to see him, you know, reach such a huge monumental feat and accomplishment, was just very wholesome to me as well.
How long did it hit you? Like you said, hit it straight away, but how long did it take to sink in? Because like, I've seen photos of you diving out, and like you said, that's going down in history.
Yeah, I mean, I think by the time I got to the sideline and, like, you know, the attention was off me from, like, a scoring standpoint.
Yeah.
And they kind of got back into the game. I was just, you know, looking up at the scoreboard. They had the whole presentation. Obviously, Brett had a video kind of just thinking or congratulating Aaron. And I was just like, wow, like, you know, look where I'm at, look what I'm doing, and look what I just did.
Yeah.
And it was just kind of, like I said, it was just a very very present moment for me of just being so thankful for, you know, the different things that I've gone through in life, of me being proud of myself, of knowing the different hardships that I've gone through, and still be able to persevere through those moments and still be here doing something I love. And, you know, very thankful for the opportunity.
Yeah, I reckon that really rams home the at the top mindset, where you've gone from, you know, only one team thinking of you as a wide receiver. You know, could have gone down the tight end path, or, you know, switched to be a safety or something like that, to, you know, catching one of the most historical balls in history. Like, it's definitely one of those ram home that the at the top really does make sense and come through.
But. Right.
You had your best year receiving-wise last year, 40 catches, 513 yards. Where do we go from here? What's 22 look like?
Like I said earlier, I'm not really a big numbers goal setter from that standpoint. You know, my main focus has always been, especially the past few years, has been the Super Bowl. You know, I know that if we go to the Super Bowl, that means that all those numbers and my individual success will have to match that level as well. And so if I just focus on that and just, you know, making sure that I'm bringing my teammates along, making sure that they're practicing hard, that they're developing their skill set, and that they're growing and learning the game to the standard that we expect them to, then I'm doing the right thing. You know, obviously I want my numbers to increase from that standpoint. Devontae leaving, Marquez leaving, leaves a lot of targets up for grabs from that standpoint. But going back to, like I said, even back in Jacksonville, I always prepared myself as a starter, as a number one guy. And since I've had that mindset for 4 or 5 years now, because now that it's actually a reality, you know, I've already practiced and developed my habits as if I were to be in the position that I am today. So I expect nothing but an increase and a lot of success this year, especially being with Aaron as my quarterback, you know. Him winning back-to-back MVPs, you know, even though I'm not awarded the award or gifted that award, I still take a lot of pride and success from that standpoint. So I definitely want to help him be successful and him break more individual franchise records, and then also to win the MVP again.
Yeah, absolutely. One final question for you, mate. But before then, I really can't thank you enough for coming on and speaking with me. I'm a huge Green Bay man, so this is honestly, like, I honestly still can't believe this has quite happened, but where do you see yourself in the next 5 to 10 years? Where does Alan Lazard go?
5 to 10 years from now, hopefully a lot thicker pockets. probably, hopefully on the way to, if not that I have it already by that point, I'm starting and developing a family, and everything. But from a on the field perspective, hopefully I have a bunch of all pros and a few Super Bowl rings to match absolutely. That as well. And that's kind of where I just see myself. And like I said, I've always been a big picture mindset, but just like so focused on the details of today and not thinking too long term. So it's hard for me to think about like 5-10 years exactly where I'd want to be and what I'd be doing and this and that, because I don't even know what I want to eat for dinner tonight.
Yeah.
What I'm saying? I'm just kind of staying present from that standpoint. So I'm definitely excited about my future. I'm excited about the season, and really looking forward to whatever life has in store for me next.
Beautiful. Like I said, mate, thank you very much. Go ahead and sign that big money contract to stay in Green Bay. I'd be more than happy with that. But I really do appreciate you coming on and talking to me today, mate.
Absolutely. I appreciate you having me on and waking up early.
Yeah. I reckon you can see the sun coming up in the background, light to dark to light. I really do appreciate you coming on, mate.
Absolutely. You have a good one.
Cheers, mate. And remember, if you enjoyed the Any Given Sunday Australia podcast, leave us a 5-star rating and a review and set the little reminder so that you can get told when our episodes are released. You can find us on all the socials, Twitter, AGSAU Podcast, Instagram, anygivensunday.au, TikTok, YouTube, and Facebook, all Any Given Sunday Australia. Thanks again to Alan, and as always, Go Pack Go!